Who am I and how am I feeling? I'm Clive Owen and I'm great, thanks. What if businesses could really understand how their customers feel, act on it, and make them feel better? It's a thing. It's SAP Experience Management. For more, go to sap.com/XM.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame death party!
What's going on? You are listening to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, and I am, of course, joined with my compatriot, actually in studio today, not on Discord.
It's Alex. I am alive. I am here.
Man, it's been a long time since we've actually done a show in person.
It's been hot, transportation's been weird, and Discord's been easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of nice being able to sit here with no pants and record the show. There's a little bit of behind the scenes for you, because if it's hot... Screw that.
I'm wearing pants, but I might not be wearing a top. Together we make a full person.
That's right. Together, one fully functioning adult. That's how we roll around here. So anyway, a lot of stuff to talk about this week. There's a lot of news. There was some stuff that late broke on Sunday into Monday. We're going to talk about it on the show next week. So if you're wondering why we're not talking about the Kevin Smith He-Man thing, that's why.
Yeah, and at the same time, it gives us time for the stories to percolate and maybe get a little more detail.
Yeah, because I noticed like CNN and Entertainment Weekly's picked it up. So there'll be more details. I know when he records Fat Man on Batman this week, he'll be talking about it. So I'll listen to that podcast.
What's he going to call that show now that he's thin?
Thin Man? I don't know.
Vegan on Batman or
vegan
something?
Vegan on Batman. Something like that. So yeah, we often typically start off the show saying what we've been doing over the past week. I discovered via Alex the wonders of the 2009 masterpiece movie that premiered at Toronto After Dark, Black Dynamite with Michael Jai White.
Yeah.
You done fucked up, Dr. Wu.
Yeah. Fiendish Dr. Wu, you done fucked up now. Your knowledge of scientific biological transmogrification is only outdone by your penchant for kung fu treachery.
You sold me with one line. There's one, he's talking to the scientist, Dr. Wu, and he's like, watch out for Black Dynamite. Go get him. He comes into the hallway. This henchman looks left, looks right. Black Dynamite's there, punches him, knocks him to the ground, and Black Dynamite yells, can you see where I'm coming from, you giant motherfucker? And it's just the way that he screeches it.
And he pulls out his eyes.
Yeah, that he flings him at Dr. Wu.
There's so many details, like, it's made to be a spoof and an homage to blaxploitation films where they were made amateurish. But it's made amateurish on purpose.
Yeah, and it looks fucking fantastic. Like, I'm surprised I slept on this movie for so long.
Well, see, it only made like 200,000 in theaters. I'm one of those guys that went to a screening in town when there's like 10 of us there, dying laughing. Nobody heard of it. It hit Blu-ray. And at work, I got one guy to watch it, and he was singing his praises too. But everybody kept looking at us like we, you know, had our
like two heads or something?
Two heads, or like our dongs were hanging up or something. Like, what's wrong with these people? And then they're like, why would you want to watch that? And I'm like, because it's hilarious.
Yeah, like I was sold on just how ridiculous it is. Plus, I've been a fan of Michael Jai White's for like 20 years.
At least since Spawn.
Yeah, Spawn's the first movie I saw him in, and then he was in Universal Soldier 2, The Return, I think.
Yeah.
Him and Bill Goldberg were the bad guys. Well,
also known as Universal Soldier 4, because they had those two terrible TV movies.
I forgot about those.
I think one had Gary Busey in it.
I think so. And I love the Universal Soldiers franchise, because the wreck... Anyway, I can talk about JCVD all day. Trying to think, what else have I been doing this week? Been doing a lot of reading. I got... I read comic books. I used to read it on the Boom app, which has now been retired. Now it's the Madefire app, so now it covers multiple different companies. And I decided to branch out some of my reading this week. So I think it was published by Dark Horse, I want to say, and I got the Mass Effect Omnibuses 1 and 2. So I've been reading through those ever so slowly. Plus, there's like any company you can think of exists on this app. So I'm doing a lot more digital comic reading than I have in a very long time. Still reading Go-Go Power Rangers and Power Rangers. Still thoroughly enjoying those. And I didn't play any video games this week. Like, I was hoping to finish Dragon Ball FighterZ this week. I just kind of forgot about it. So, whoops. And I watched some stuff for review this week.
Oh, nice.
Which I'll be talking about later on in the show. Actually, I guess coming up on the show before I get to what you've been up to. Coming up on the show this week, we'll talk about some of the news that happened this week. We'll be talking about how you pronounce data, or data, depending on how you want to talk about it. A guy wearing a TV on his head. Some news is not looking so good for Hasbro, if you're a fan of the Transformers franchise. And some other late-breaking stuff that has come to our attention. But to continue on, as we often talk about, what have you been up to?
Well, I pieced together the old computer I was podcasting on, which happened to be a decent gaming computer from several years ago, threw it up on the like Kijiji to sell, and you know, was fully expecting to get lowballers, but I had a guy almost immediately message me. He's like, this is the exact same model I use at work, and I need one for home so that I have like backup parts. And he's like, I'm willing to pay exactly... basically what you want, but will you take an Amazon gift card for it instead of cash? And I went, sure. So Alex got himself finally a 4K TV that has HDR support. It's not the higher end ones that does a Dolby Vision or anything, but it does do HDR10, the entry level true HDR. And I was able to calibrate it the way I want. It has a Roku player built in, and I was finally able to watch some movies on my Xbox One X in 4K, you know, with HDR enabled. Same goes for playing a couple games here and there. Found out that the PS4 Pro really struggles at HDR 4K, so you got to drop it to 1080p. Otherwise, you're going to hear a rocket taken off, and it might just freeze on you.
Fun!
Because it's really at the end of, like, the edge of what you can do 4K-wise with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily going to be your best experience. That being said, I have gotten some few movies to review that came in from Mill Creek. And basically, whenever I get new ones, I post them up on Twitter now and share them, say, here's what's coming in. I also have the gift guide that I have to work on.
For back to school.
Back to school, sort of parents or gift yourself or whatever. Just something, be prepared, like, for here's how you can have a media player on the go. What's a good streaming player to get? That sort of deal. Like, what can you get on the cheap that's going to serve you well in school? And as well as a review copy that I have to work on for Remedy's Control, which it looks like it's going to be pretty good. Can't say anything more about it until later on.
I think next week you'll be able to talk about it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's one of those games that was super highly anticipated and then sort of went under the radar for a bit.
Yeah, because I haven't heard a whole lot about it.
It was two E3s in a row, had really good like showings, and then sort of went away. Not because it's anything wrong with it, but because there was so much else that came out around the same time.
Yeah, it just got overshadowed.
So that, you know, that comes out at the end of the month. And so I'm working on that. And other than that, it's just been sort of going around visiting family, doctor's appointments, that sort of deal. And now I'm here in the studio.
Good times. So anyway, guys, hopefully you will enjoy us on this trek through the news, the weirdness that is Planet Earth, and all the reviews that we got coming up on the show. So coming up on the show this week, review-wise, we'll be taking a look at Detective Pikachu from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment, Audio-Technica, or we'll be looking at a headset from them, and finally, two of the latest ports from Sega in the Sega Ages collection, Space Hero and Puyo Puyo. So stay tuned. The Twig, the Flags of Stupidity. I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Alex the producer. We'll be back.
We'll be back right after Mike almost sneezes.
That's right. We are looking at Detective Pikachu from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital. Detective Pikachu is one of the most successful video game movies of all time, if not the most successful, coming in the theaters this past May, though it did have some competition in Avengers Endgame, so it didn't make as much money as I think it should have. But still, it's based upon the fantastically huge Pokemon franchise from Nintendo, so you know people were going to go out to see it. And should you see it? Yes. Detective Pikachu is one of the best movies I've seen this year, starring Justice Smith and Ryan Reynolds as the two people that pair up. Ryan Reynolds plays Pikachu, Detective Pikachu, and Justice Smith plays Tim Goodman, the son of a missing detective, who's basically looking for what happened to his father in the world of Pokemon and Rhyme City. And what follows is an adventure across the Pokemon world. Basically, you're getting multi-generations of Pokemon. You'll see stuff like Totodile, Squirtle, Pandagoro, I think is one of them, the big panda-looking Pokemon, if you couldn't guess. But you see Charizard, Blastoise, Gengar, if you can't tell I'm a Gen 1 guy. And you get a lot of love. In fact, during the pseudo-director's commentary, which they basically call detective mode, there's like 80 Pokemon in this movie. A lot of them are hidden Easter eggs, so there's a lot. If you don't see your favorite, don't worry. Hopefully they'll make a sequel. But in terms of the disc itself, there are a lot of special features. Detective mode is the most fleshed out. Like I said, it acts as like a pseudo director's commentary. You'll have the director pop in, the actors pop in, kind of give you like these pop-up video-like facts, if you remember that from VH1 back in the day. They'll say what Pokemon's on screen, what it's weak against, strong against, some of its vital stats. You'll see like cutaways, how they did certain stunts, how they filmed certain scenes, different angles, stuff like that. And it's kind of nice. And right at the end of the movie, they have like a huge cash shot where they're in the roundhouse where they have the big Pikachu versus Charizard battle, and you have the entire cast and crew there, which I think was like near the last days of production and whatnot, and the director talking about how much fun he had, how his kids talked him into it before he could even say no. There's also a thing called My Pokemon Adventure, which a lot of these special features seem like YouTube ish sort of like special features, sort of things that would have come out close to the movie. There, some of them are pretty short. The other one, which is called Creating the World of Detective Pikachu, there's like five or six featurettes. None of them are too long. You can get through that in about 20-25 minutes. There's an alternate opening, which I'm glad they didn't go with. It's kind of lame. There's Mr. Mime's audio commentary, which in my opinion is kind of a waste of a special feature, because the joke's right there. It's Mr. Mime, and it's basically just a replaying of the mime scene in the movie. You also get Ryan Reynolds outside the actor studio, where he talks about getting inside the head of Detective Pikachu, which is amusing. And finally, there's a music video, and this is the most egregious part about this, because if you remember, the Pokemon movie trailers showed Bonnie Taylor's Holding Out for a Hero, which was made famous by Shrek 2, Short Circuit 2, and it's one of the most iconic songs of the 1980s, and it was used in the marketing for this movie, and it fits so perfectly. So I was really hoping, if we were going to get a music video, we would get either the original Pokemon theme cut with scenes from Detective Pikachu, like the Jason Page version, or we get the Bonnie Taylor song intercut with scenes from this movie. And unfortunately, we just get some random, I guess it's from some Warner Brothers artist they want to push. It's not a terrible song, it's just not what I was hoping for. However, though, the main reason to own this movie is the movie itself. It is fantastic. It's a great movie for kids. My wife, who's not really a Pokemon fan, she only really plays Pokemon Go, had a fantastic time with it. When I went and saw this in theaters, people were dressed up for it in like Pikachu and Bulbasaur onesies and Squirtle onesies. I went with my little stuffed Psyduck. So I had a fantastic time. You will too. Detective Pikachu is most definitely recommended from us here at This Week in Geek.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark!
And welcome back to Twig, the Flagsman of Stupidity. Again, I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Alex the Producer. Let's talk about the news that is and was right here on planet Earth this past week. And we're going to start things off with a bit of a doozy. I can't say I'm surprised to see this happen, but Loot Crate is facing Chapter 11 bankruptcy after substantial layoffs. So last week, they laid off more than 60 full-time employees, which I'm surprised they had that many. Evidently, things aren't looking too good for these guys. These guys owe a lot of money everywhere. Evidently, they have yet to ship products tied to $20 million in sales. Loot Crate reportedly owes more than $30 million in trade debt and nearly $6 million behind in sales tax. And I know there's a few other companies that process their like credit cards. They pulled out their money fearing chargebacks and stuff like that. So that's not a good sign when your credit card processor pulls out.
They usually give you a good 6 months or more to get back on track.
Yeah. So according to this, to help facilitate the sale and transition, Loot Crate has received a commitment of up to $10 million from Money Chest LLC, a current investor in the company. They said, during the sales process, we will have the financial resources to purchase the goods and services necessary to fulfill our looters' needs and continue the high-quality service and support they've come to expect from the Loot Crate team. This comes from Officer Chris Davis. He also goes on to say in this piece, we've worked diligently to overcome the challenges with our capital structure along with legacy issues the company has been struggling with for the past 18 months. We are very pleased with the progress from an operational efficiency standpoint. However, the company still faces liquidity issues. After a careful review of a wide range of available options, management determined that the sale of the company is in the best interest of all parties, including our valued looters, / customers, and employees. I can't say I'm surprised to see Loot Crate go this way, because it's the best known subscription service.
The problem is, at least in Canada, it's expensive because the shipping cost was too much for us.
Yeah, I think you were paying at least $10 more, at least.
Well, not only that, no, there's the conversion rate, but then it ended up being almost double the price.
When I purchased one Loot Crate. I bought one for the 2016 Ghostbusters movie. It was the exclusive. That should have been $55. I think I paid close to $90.
Canadian or U.S.?
Canadian.
Okay, so it's not quite as bad.
But it still hit me pretty hard. I was like, holy shit. And I wasn't super impressed with what I got. I got a t-shirt, a vinyl figure, which I don't know where the fuck it is, a 1/4 scale proton pack of the new movie, a pin, which is pretty cool, a Ghostbusters rug, which is like a bathroom rug. It's just of the logo. And some behind-the-scenes photographs or little things, and it was okay. I was like, all right, that was a one-and-done experience. And I always get the emails from Loot Crate, like, this month we're doing Halo, we're doing Stranger Things, or we're doing Game of Thrones or something. And none of them have really jumped out at me. And we've seen other ones come and go, because there was the Canadian version, Nerd Block, and they got liquidated fucking terrible.
Well, the cost of shipping in Canada is just more money than it is in the States.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you got competition. There's like the wrestle crates and all that. I feel certain specific fandoms can survive. I think the wrestle crate or wrestle box will survive if it's not tied to them, because you have these fervent fans that are willing to spend more money.
Well, it's weird. I did wrestle crate once. They sent me a t-shirt for I want to say it was a really shitty Macho Man t-shirt. I got a beer cozy of some wrestler, an autograph of Abyss, and I think that was it.
I think you gave me the Abyss autograph.
Yeah, and I think they're asking $25, and that's not terrible.
You know, that's what I mean. Like, if you can get all of that for under $40 in shipping included in Canada, that's good, because a t-shirt's going to cost you $25 plus shipping. The cozy's going to cost you $10. An autograph will cost you $25. So it means you just don't have to be there.
Yeah. Although I'm surprised a lot of these subscription servers, like I said, have not taken longer to die out, because my wife, Blair, pointed this out to me. You saw Loot Crate exclusives in our dollar stores last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we saw the Punisher and Daredevil reversible beanies. We saw some of the other toys that were
and that
appearing.
Was not just, like, Dollarama here has, like, things up to $4. That was $1.25 at Dollar Tree.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
And that was chain-wide, meaning they liquidated all that stock to them.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I mean, I've seen some people on my Facebook and Twitter were like, well, I can't say I'm surprised to see it happen.
No, the only ones that will survive, like I said, will be the ones that are very niche-oriented, like that, or like the ones where it's like, I think Tokyo Treats, one of them, where you get
Japanese candies.
Those sorts of things will last because it's just food resellers.
Yeah.
The other things that will probably last are the ones where you get, where you can get, like, board games or, you know, used things or even...
There was a comic one. I think it was called Comic Bento Box. Yeah. I think they're still around.
Yeah, you pick a couple random single issues and you get one trade.
Another one, which I don't suspect will last because the market will fall out of it simply, is the Retro Gaming Box or something along those lines.
Yeah, where you get... Well, eventually, you're going to only get shit games that nobody wants.
Yeah, like... I'm surprised half of them don't end up with sports titles. Somebody I knew got Diddy Kong Racing, which is a great title, but that's a rarity. You're not going to get like a Final Fantasy VII or something.
Or you question
that.
Sometimes when like a YouTuber gets it, if they know ahead of time they're a YouTuber before they send it, so they send something that's expensive in it.
Yeah, so you know they're quote unquote
like,
getting something.
Be like,
good.
Oh my god, I got Earthbound, and you'll be like,
yeah,
really,
right.
Really, motherfucker, like,
yeah.
There's that issue of the dishonesty in some of those programs I've heard of. But then, like you said, there's a scarcity thing, too. Eventually, they run out. What you will never run out of are the comic book ones, because there's always, you know, it's like, oh, pay $10 for a box, and you get one trade, which could easily cost you $10 to $15, and then we'll throw in five of these, like, issues that would be, like, 50 cents each, but they're trying to clear out stock from, like, a giant warehouse.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, those are completely random, and you may get a gem in there. But again, it's all in the eye of the beholder. So there's that, or ones where you get fiction novels. Like, used bookstores will do that to get rid of some of their old stock. They can do packages like that, like blind boxes. And that's cool, but the ones that will survive are, like, ones that are food-based and ones that are very niche-oriented, like an anime one, or like if they did, like, a My Little Pony box or something.
I don't think a pony box would sell, especially now that the series is starting to wind down.
Yeah.
But okay. I would see, like, A lot of the food resellers,
or
those health ones,
or things
that are
like a Lego box, like a builder box, where you had like where you could get like little Meccano or Kinects or something. You know what I mean? Like if the little toys like that, or ones where you can get like pachinko machine toys and stuff,
mm-hmm.
things like that. Things that are cheap and easy to get. Ones that are especially ones that are like chocolates and things like that. That those are easy to do. It's
when you start dealing with exclusives that are being built for you
or t-shirts
or designed for you.
Anytime where you have to offer multiple sizes of something is where you enter into trouble.
Yeah. So, Loot Crate, we'll see what happens. Obviously, not too happy about the 60 full-time employees that got laid off as a result of this. But it seemed like it was probably a fun place to work while it lasted. So, excuse me. Good luck to you. So, the next story... that I thought I'd cover this week. This one I'm kind of surprised and kind of not. Again, goes back to how much is somebody willing to pay for something. So this past year at San Diego Comic-Con, and a little bit beforehand, I think, Hasbro, the toy company, unveiled a 2-foot-tall Unicron figure. And this is movie accurate. And they're asking it to be funded through Hasbro Pulse, which is their like crowd backing website, and they're asking $574 US
to get one.
To get one. Now, this is not the first time they've done crowdfunding, because they did Jabba's sail barge last year or the year before, alas, I can't remember which, and it was at $500, and they required so many backers to do it.
You know what, at that price, it better be 4 feet tall.
So I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at the Hasbro price. So they have to make it, they have to have 8,000 backers.
Which might be enough.
Nope. Currently, they have 2,726 with 12 days to go.
Oh, wait, that's 5 US.
Yeah.
So those of us in, like, Australia, Canada...
Oh, just imagine the shipping on this.
This is that's a $1,000 item for us.
Yeah, easily.
So even the only people that might be okay are the UK, because for them, that's only going to be... That'll be, like, 300 pounds sterling, which is still a lot of money. Like, and even then, actually, England will get fucked on the shipping.
And you may not see it until the earliest you'll see it is early 2021.
You know, you can get like a cheap used car that'll last you a month for that.
Oh, and you are limited to 5 per transaction.
Who is it for stores?
No, this is for your personal collection. Now, there was a video where they had, I think it's somebody from the Takara company transforming this in a tuxedo. Just because.
Does it come with that guy?
It fucking well better.
Does he suck my dick?
Because, like, I'm showing Alex the video of it now.
Because I don't pay $500 for anything unless I get my dick sucked or I get a television or something.
The only thing that's worth that, I mean, in my mind, as a toy collector or a toy aficionado, hot toys are generally worth their price because of the likenesses and all the stuff you get. It's
again,
a quality.
It's
but,
the eye of the beholder. I would never pay anything like that for a statue that doesn't do anything.
Well, this thing does. That's the thing. It does
do
stuff.
It does do something. It's not $700, $800 worth of something.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, you know, at that price, you know what you're getting into? A new fucking computer.
Yeah.
That you can use for multiple years to get multiple years of enjoyment out of that you use
every day. I could see this, though, if this had got funded, which it probably won't. That and the fact Hasbro gave it no time.
Question.
Like a month
and
change.
Are they keeping your money whether you fund it or not?
No.
Because some of those private services do shit like that.
No, this is Hasbro. They wouldn't do that.
They would lose face too badly.
Exactly. Over. It's just not a good sign for them. However, though, if this did get made, I can only imagine what the secondary market would look like for this.
You know, for that price, you know what it should come with? Like a beach ball that's like Cybertron.
You better say, yeah, you better get an inflatable Cybertron.
Cybertron that you can tear a piece out of.
Which would be really cool. I mean, it's neat, though. Because the Unicron, obviously, it can move. It requires a stand to stand up, though.
That production run is too... They want too much. That if they said limited to 2,500 copies, then they could easily have done it.
But then the price would have gone up. Probably would have been like $1,000. But
you know
some Transformers fans would pay it.
Do you know
some
what
of
they,
those...
would, they would be better off doing for something like that? You want to pay $100 and we'll give you a private... Like, for $100, we'll give you private schematics, and you can 3D print your own.
I could see that opening up a whole world of trouble.
Like, or, you know what I mean? Like, there should be, like, if it was a, or if it was a, instead of $600, whatever, if it's $300, and it's this big project that you assemble yourself, where it doesn't come pre-assembled.
Yeah, I mean,
because that would make shipping cheaper, and it would also be a project for somebody to build, like a model.
It's unfortunate that this isn't going to happen. I mean, there's also another crowdfunding one that they're trying to do. That's for like a $300 Cookie Monster Muppet.
That what?
I guess it's like master replicas quality. I guess it's like a studio scale.
Does that one suck my dick? Because then I'm not interested.
I guess you could stick your head up its ass if you really wanted to.
Ooh, Cookie.
But still, I mean, that's insane. To think about that's how much they want to charge, but they gave it no time for this thing to really kick off, especially right after Comic-Con when people's wallets are already depleted.
Well, absolutely, it's just too much. Like I'm just trying to fathom who has that kind of money.
Well, in terms of my friends, there would be two of my friends that would probably buy it. Ryan would probably buy it, and maybe Spada.
Like, to give you an idea, that's a third of a price of a real doll, which can have sex with you.
What is your obsession with sex today? Jesus Christ.
I try to say as many things as I can to get that reaction out of you.
Jesus Christ. Well, I think about it. For $600, you can get a lot nicer statues.
Absolutely.
From Sideshow Collectibles. But then again, it doesn't transform.
For $600, you can get really high-end Gundam kits.
Or you can get a couple of hot toys.
Yeah.
Or you can get a single really high-end hot toy. Hulkbuster.
You can get an Xbox One X.
Yeah.
Or you can get a decent computer. You can get on sale, like for back to school, a gaming laptop for $600 or $700. Like there's so many things you could do with that would be served better. Where do you put this thing?
I was about to say displaying it is going to be an issue too. I can't imagine dusting this thing.
Oh,
and if it falls to the floor, it's done.
Like you would have they'd be smarter doing Metroplex.
They already have. They did it in the Titan scale, which it was a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive, then it was regular retail, and it stood about 2 feet tall.
Well, and here's the problem with the scale thing too. If you're making Unicron, he should be about 12 feet tall.
It's a great looking toy, no doubt, with all the little parts and all the little details.
I saw a knockoff one at a flea market when I was like 7.
Yeah, like they have made Unicron toys. They've even made ones that turn into the planet.
That's what I saw, and I thought it was only a replica, but it turns out it might have been like a Hong Kong knockoff or something.
Well, they did make the Unicron, I want to say, for Armada and Energon.
Well, no, this would have been about 92.
No, not that I'm aware of, then. Like, there was one prototyped. I think they showed it off in the Toys That Made Us Season 2. I think they showed it in one of the Takara offices. But in terms of a mass market, no.
Wow.
This,
I had the Metroplex.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a fantastic toy.
It was about a foot tall.
Yeah, about...
A foot and a half,
yeah,
maybe.
Well, 15 inches, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, I could see that. If they wanted to do that to scale, you make that guy 4 feet tall. 3 feet tall. And because it's very boxy, it's a lot easier to injection mold that than it is to make all these little intricate wings and parts.
It's because of the wings and the spines and everything.
This is a very boxy design, and it also is more stable because you can just, instead of having him transformed into robot form, you just have him in base form most of the time.
Yeah. Like, with this Unicron, you have to have the two stands to make them stand up in robot mode, presumably, and one to make them stand in, or one to float, I guess, in planet. I mean, it's cool that his mouth moves and it can eat other planets if you want it to.
For that,
it would be neat if it lit up. I don't think it does.
For that price, when I press a button, it better have Orson Welles' voice trying to sell me wine while he's drunk.
See, that's the thing. I mean, that's another thing, too. For that type of money, there better be lights and sounds.
Yeah, and it better be like, Sir, wine is the best wine. Like all those hilariously drunk commercials you used to do.
Yeah, way back.
You should have the ability to do that. Or for that amount of money, you know what it should come with? A USB stick that has like
the movie on it.
That has like iTunes copy of the movie or something on it.
Yeah, like there better be something a little bit extra other than just this figure. Like I said, it's not going to happen in this many days. If they started out at the beginning of the year, I said, okay, guys, by September 1st, 8,000 people have got to pre-order this. With 2,300, I said, it is not going to happen.
And if they slowly, over the next couple months, were announcing extra little things that they would give with it, like, hey, we're also going to provide you with a soft cover book on a visual guide of the design.
Yeah. Like, or there like, could like, be so many things they could have done and they didn't do.
Or like one of those, you know how they have those car technical manuals? You know the ones I'm talking about? Made one for him, like just as a mock one. Because that is one that to transform, you're going to need steps.
Yeah, like you're going to need a book. Not a booklet, a book.
Like it should come with, you know what it should come with? It should come with a copy of the movie, either on a USB stick or on a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
It should also come with the soundtrack on either a record or a CD. And, I mean, these are costs to them that cost maybe $20.
Yeah. And work with Shout Factory.
Yeah. They could have done that. Shout Factory could have promoted it. They could have done a thing where if you buy the movie, get, I don't know, 2% or 5% off that figure. But, no, it sounds like they really didn't. They really just wanted to milk the fans.
Well, yeah, like, this was not thought through. Transformers fans are very loyal. They will buy things if you give it to them. but you got to give them time. Plus the fact they charge it to you all at once.
That's insane. They should be on anything over
payment plan.
Anything over $500 should be a payment plan. You have to have $100 down, and then every month till it comes out
takes like $100.
We'll take 50 or 100, whatever you choose. And if you choose to do the financing option, it ends up costing you an extra $50.
Yeah.
People are willing to do that if they can budget for it.
Yeah. But dropping that money right after Comic-Con? No. So moving on to our next story. This one, kind of exciting. As reported by Deadline, Entertainment Weekly, and multiple outlets, Ewan McGregor is in talks to possibly return as Obi-Wan Kenobi in a Disney Plus series. Details are still sparse, but... he's been talking about doing an Obi-Wan movie for years. A Disney Plus series I'm more excited for. Yeah. I want more Obi-Wan content spread out over a longer thing. I'd like to know when it takes place in the Star Wars timeline. My guess is it probably...
it'll be when he's a hermit.
Yeah, so between Eps 3 and 4.
Because he's aging appropriately into that now.
Yeah.
You know, if they were smart, you put this 10 years... after the end of 3. Because it would be, in real life, about 15 years since he played the character. But that would allow them to have even episodes where you can see him looking over Luke.
Luke, yeah.
Like, seeing him from afar. You could have him interacting. You could see things like that we never saw. Like, maybe he's been protecting him for years and you didn't know about it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I've always wanted to see, because they've done comics about it. It's happened in the Clone Wars series, or Rebels, I think. Darth Maul is still alive. We saw him in Solo.
Yeah. Have him... you know what you could do? Have him where maybe he's not on the planet. Maybe he doesn't end up on Tatooine right away. And in that gap, maybe a 10-year period, he's actually gone and he's searching for
other Jedi.
Like Ahsoka or whatever, where he's like looking for, like... you know, what was it? What's that third type of Jedi where they're, like, not good or bad?
Gray or whatever?
Yeah, where they have the double-sided sabers and the yellow lightsabers. Have him look for, like, remnants of the Old Republic or something. Like what was he doing on his path to enlightenment?
Yeah. Like, there's so many possibilities here, especially since The Mandalorian set to premiere this year. It's going to be a good year for Star Wars, and if Disney Plus, which I guess is sort of a follow-up story, this just came out today. Looks like Disney Plus is going to launch in Canada in November, along with other territories. I know the U.S. being the big one, which really surprises me, because we were talking about this before. Was Disney Plus going to get cut off at the knees in Canada because of Crave, Netflix, and all those other digital services?
And my guess is it's going to be like CBS All Access, where it's stripped down. We might only get about 50% of the content until those licenses are up. Because I know that Crave and other people have their licenses for the next couple of years. And they literally can't pull out or risk paying them the full price of what they owe them.
Could Disney do it, though? I mean, they're Disney. They've got God's money.
The problem is they could do it and then end up having to fold the service in Canada.
Oh, wow.
Because it's a lot of money out. People forget, like, they would have to operate as a separate entity up here. So... it's all going to depend on how they stage that, but it's probably going to be like CBS, where CBS All Access in Canada has no Star Trek.
Yeah, like if you want Star Trek in Canada, it's on Crave.
Crave, or I think the Netflix...
and Netflix still has it, too.
Yeah, the Netflix has a few of the series still. Or either they have the movies or they have the series. I can't remember one or the other.
They've got the series.
Yeah, the movies are on Crave.
I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, and then Discovery is on Crave.
Yes.
So... there's been no word yet. Oh, wait, no, there has. Picard is airing on Space.
That doesn't surprise me.
Which also means, this confirms, they didn't say it, this confirms that it will be weekly releasing episodes, not all at once.
Binging, yeah.
Because of their deal. People don't realize that the deal with Space as a co-producer means that Space airs it day and date with it, so they have to drop it 8 p.m. Eastern time at the same time. Actually, I think it's 9 p.m. Eastern. But they get it in the States, where it airs 8 p.m. live here. So we're the only country that has it on terrestrial TV.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, so it means we don't have to subscribe to a service. It also means that we're the only country that gets it in surround sound. Because that's one thing about these services, other than Netflix and Amazon Prime, almost everything is stereo only, which is kind of a bummer when you're getting these 4K streams, but you only have stereo sound.
You'd think with the technology now, it would just... automatically. So
nope, Hulu, none of the other ones, they don't have any surround sound capabilities. usually you have to wait till it hits like international Netflix or something else. Mm-hmm. Crave isn't in surround sound either, which is a bummer. You spend $20 a month and you should be able to get surround sound.
Well, I think I pay 14 or yeah. something like that.
You, if you have a bundle with your cable service.
Yeah. So the last story, this one, Alex, you're going to take lead on because you found this one. And it involves two of our favorite action stars.
Oh, okay. So if you've been wondering what, you know, why we haven't had like an Expendables 4 yet and there was sort of development hell and everything. Well, it's because Dolph Lundgren and Sylvester Stallone have been working on a new TV show together.
Okay.
Trying to pitch it. Basically, it's going to be an action, you know, action drama, what you've come to get used to with both of these guys in their individual films and together. And it's been pitched around, and it looks like it may be getting greenlit in that I believe they filmed at least a pilot from what I was reading. But good news for people that love their action stars in their 60s and 70s.
Yeah, because these guys have to have some way to pay off their friggin' mansions, I guess.
Well, I mean, you know, we've got the Rambo coming out, which looks fantastic.
That looks cool.
So, I mean, Stallone is not slowing down, and Dolph, I would not be surprised if he directs a bunch of episodes, because of his direct-to-video movies, the ones he's directed have been the better ones. So it's kind of cool, and hopefully that means that we can start seeing, like, JCVD and other people guest star in this show. Because if they're producing it, this is basically the Expendables that we haven't been able to get.
And the Expendables on a TV budget could be cool if the right network.
Especially if, it sounds like, I don't think they're shopping it to network TV mm-hmm. or cable. It's probably streaming. And if that's the way, then that means we're going to get 8 or 10 episodes.
Which is fine.
And that means they can still go do regular movies.
Yeah. Like, one example of a show that I think had a budget behind it was Amazon's Jack Ryan. And if you told me we could get an 8-episode Expendables and have the quality gunfights that we got in Jack Ryan yeah. or something like
some
that.
Some cool hand-to-hand stuff. Maybe have a Keanu Reeves show up for an episode or something.
Yeah.
You know, give, because the JCVD, like the Jean-Claude Van Johnson show that Amazon did,
mm-hmm.
it got canceled even though it was brilliantly funny, had good acting, surprisingly, from Van Damme. Because it was too expensive for just one star. If you get these guys together, you could do $6 million an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it would sell internationally. Especially if they make them, let's say, like 1 hour or 1 hour and 10 minute episodes. They're basically like TV movies. Two-parters.
Or even to raise the stakes a little bit, you pitch this to HBO Max.
Yeah.
They're going to need something to replace that Game of yeah. Thrones, and Watchmen, yeah. I'm sorry, ain't fucking it.
No, Watchmen looks cool, but it's not going to be the same thing. Like, you want to pitch this to them, or Cinemax, who has a lot of action shows, like Strike Back. You pitch that there, make them two-part episodes. It's like 2 50-minute episodes per storyline. And then, internationally, you can splice them together as movies, because a lot of the Eastern European and Asian countries still are bankable for these guys.
Yep.
Like, and not just like these big, big movies. They could put them in theaters and make 10 or 15 million internationally just in that. So I can't see this as really as something that can fail.
It just, hopefully we get these before they get too old.
Yeah. Like, it'd be the thing is, like, if you're going to film it, film 2 or 3 seasons in a row.
Yeah. Just get it done. One and done. Spend your 40, 50 days in yeah. production.
Like,
and just get
you know,
it done.
Say we're going to have 8-episode seasons. Okay. You know, order us 24 episodes, so we get 3 years worth.
Yeah.
Film them back to back. Then you have 3 years worth. They can make their movies. And then if it's good, maybe order them back for another 6 or 8 or something.
Yeah. And then this way,
I cannot see them going the 22-episode route unless somebody like Fox, who needs programming now, is like, hey, guys,
we need money. You need money.
We heard that you want to make some money. And we also heard that all of our fans love watching Bloodsport, Rambo, and like Universal Soldier.
Speaking of Fox, who in their right fucking mind greenlit that BH90210 show? Holy dog shit, is that fucking terrible?
Something tells me it's not the ABC end.
Like, shit, man. Somebody clearly is like, well, I know these guys aren't busy. Ian Ziering isn't off fighting Sharknadoes anymore. Let's see what he's up to.
Well, the problem is he was like, I'm going to be in a spinoff of Swamp Thing, which is what they were making for him. And then that didn't happen.
Oh.
You know what? What I'm laughing at the most is, even if that show is going to be abysmal, it's not going to do well. We already know
no.
that. But and everybody in there, their careers are going to tank even worse, except for Priestley. because he's on that Private Eyes show.
Is actually kind of cool.
The Canadian detective show that's been on 2 or 3 years now. And I think it's renewed again. It's a good, like, it's family friendly enough. It's like an 80s or 90s detective show. And he's funny in it, playing Shadow, the former hockey star. You know what? He has a steady gig. He doesn't need this show. And you can see it watching that first episode. He's the only one that appeared relaxed and, like, in the I don't give a fuck look.
Yeah.
But not, like, the I'm bored look. Everybody else is, like, trying so hard. And he's just like, I still work and direct.
I don't need to fight fictional weather events.
I mean, sorry to get dark here, but I'm pretty sure that Luke Perry read it and had a heart attack and died, so...
He's like, God, take me now, because I'm not doing this. He's like, no, I'm not doing it.
No, Riverdale went to shit. He could see that script was going to crap in the last, second season. And then he got this script, and he's like, well, I think my time on Earth is done.
I've done my good deeds.
And now his son wrestles as Jungle Boy on AEW.
So,
yes,
clearly there is some justice.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Just, I can't, like, what has Fox produced in the last 5 years that's memorable?
5 years is memorable?
5 years is memorable. Because 24 stopped years ago.
You can't count
Legacy Bob's, didn't count.
You can't count Bob's Burgers. You can't count, because that's like 9 or 10 years.
Nothing animated.
Nothing animated?
Yeah, only live action.
They had, oh, in 5 years, nothing. They had a really good show I might be wrong, but were they the ones that produced Human Target? That was a good show, but that was like 2010 or 2011.
Yeah, say, that was a long time ago.
They've had a show... Oh, no, they have nothing. 911 is hilariously bad. I watch it for how hilariously bad it is. yeah, they really have nothing. Like
Empire, maybe? Do they do Empire?
Garbage. That show is garbage. It just happens to be watched by a lot of people. Yeah, they don't really have anything.
Yeah, like, nothing that fits that 24 demographic.
Nothing,
or even their dramas are...
They have had fantastic science fiction shows, like Almost... Was it Almost Human was theirs? I don't know. There's been, like... Remember Terra Nova?
Yeah.
Like, they've taken risks by making really good science fiction shows that they immediately cancel. Sleepy Hollow, I think, was theirs.
That
was good for season one. And then everything else was shit. Like, everything that goes past one season for them has been shit. Everything that lasts for one season is good. The X-Files revival, I like the last two seasons, but that's a revival. That doesn't count.
But it ends on such a shitty note.
Here's the thing. If they bring back, like, Millennium, maybe I'll be happy because I love Lance Henriksen. But, like, nothing. They have nothing. And from what they have coming up in the fall, I don't think they have anything either. Oh, shit, the Orville.
Okay, so all
so
right,
they have one, and that's because
and then they threw that to Hulu.
Yes, because he has pull. I guarantee you, they wanted to cancel him.
Yeah,
and he was like, "Fuck you, I will take
my toys and go
because
home."
Remember when they canceled Family Guy?
Yeah,
he retained ownership when they brought him back. He gets to end that show on his terms, and they do not want that to happen. He's basically is handling 90% of their programming.
Yeah, because it's that American Dad. That's on TBS.
Yeah, it's that, and then all the other stuff he has his fingers in.
And I used to not think very highly of that man, and then he's proved me wrong in the last 10 years
with Ted.
Yeah,
and the Orville, they have one shining beacon, and they canceled it and moved it to Hulu.
Good job, Fox. You done fucked up.
Fiendish Dr. Wu.
Fiendish Dr. Fox. All right, we'll be back right here on This Week in Geek. This is Alex's review from Audio Technica, and it is a headset that, we'll get your opinion on it.
Audio Technica are known for their high-quality sound products at reasonable prices compared to their competitors. And the ATH G1 premium gaming headset is no different. I found it to have extremely good sound reproduction, very flat, not like too bassy, too mid-range heavy, or too treble heavy. Just a very balanced, nice headset. The boom mic on it is detachable and, you know, pretty good for what it is. You end up with a fairly lengthy 2 meter, like basically 6.6 feet cord. As far as connectivity goes, it comes with one of the 3-prong, so it can be working in like anything like your gaming controllers to your phone. If you want to plug it into a PC, it has a Y splitter, so it can split to both the like headphone jack and then also to the microphone jack. And it's got an inline, you know, mic muter and volume control on the actual headset cord itself. The only downside to the set of is the build quality is kind of surprising in that it feels and looks a little cheap for what you're paying for. You know, and that's just, you know, from personal preference. These are not going to be like your daily drivers. You're probably not going to want to take these too much on the go because, you know, they're retailing for about $170 American, which are fully worth it for the sound quality alone. Like, these are going to be miles above what most wired gaming headsets sound like. These are basically like $170 good, you know, audio headset, like headphones, as far as fidelity goes. It's just they have just not the strongest you know, headphone adjuster parts. Like, they're metal, but they're kind of thin, the actual metal gauge on it, as far as, you know, that goes. So they're not going to bend very well. You're not going to want to put these in your backpack. But that being said, that's the only downside to these, because the actual sound quality and the comfortability of it is, you know, off the charts. They have the sort of leatherette feeling, like earphone cuffs, but they're not like, you know, very, very sweaty, or they don't hurt wearing them for long periods of time. And you can adjust the actual headset size, the straps at the side, to like a gigantic head, even bigger than mine. And I have a hard time with headphones usually because I just have a very large head. So I found that to be very comfortable. So as far as, you know, wearing them around the house for your gaming and everything, you're going to be fine. But these aren't going to be ones that you could really want to convert and carry with you on the go or take with you a lot of places, because it doesn't include like a carrying case or anything for that, the headset either. So it at $170, it's worth it for the quality of the actual audio. But I do think if your concern is durability, these aren't going to be the most durable. So, you know, keep a set of earbuds out there for when you go on the go, but for home use, as far as gaming goes and as far as listening to music, these could be your daily drivers for home. The actual microphone has a pretty good response, and in testing it, I used it for like on my phone for using calls as well as playing a little bit online, and everybody told me that the fidelity and what they could hear was clear and nice, and, you know, it wasn't overpowering at all with any high end or low end or anything. So it's a nice, clean condenser mic that's built in. And you can unplug that mic if you want to just use it in headphone mode, which is pretty cool as well. Now, as far as, like I said, the audio quality, it's pretty darn good. You know, frequency response range on this is 5 to 40,000 kilohertz. So on the upper end of what most like regular headphones do before you start getting into the audiophile category. Big deal here is it has a maximum input power of 300 milliwatts, which basically means you can drive these things really loud before they distort. So that is a big plus, because a lot of gaming headsets forget about the quality. They usually go for, you know, how it looks. Does it light up and have RGB lighting and all this crazy stuff? But then they forget that, hey, maybe I want actually to have like good sound. You know, what a concept, eh? So that being said, this is going to be recommended for, you know, home use. This is going to be great for using it on your Xbox, your PlayStation, same even for PC gaming. I ended up using it with my phone a fair bit, and it's very versatile that way. So if you're looking for something that you know is going to have really good sound quality, that isn't going to break the bank too much, because there are other headsets that even I've reviewed that to have the same quality as this are about $100 more. So it's all going to depend on what you want. If you want something that has, you know, a super premium sound quality, and then, you know, you're not as concerned about having super durability for on the go, then these are going to probably be the headsets you want to get.
The internet can be your window to the world. or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.
You shouldn't go to Barnes & Noble and buy 10,000 books just so you can build a book fortress and yell out, "I am your book leader." You shouldn't buy 147 copies of War and Peace, stuff them inside turkeys, and serve them at Thanksgiving as turbookins. And you definitely shouldn't buy up all the copies of Dork Diaries, causing the neighborhood kids to stage a protest in your front yard. But you could, because at the Barnes & Noble Book Haul, you can get over 1,000 titles for 50% off. Stock up at your local Barnes & Noble. Turbookins are fictitious and should not be cooked at home.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Welcome back to Twig, otherwise known as the flagship of stupidity. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Alex the producer. Let's talk about the weird, wacky, the just plain fucked up things that happened on this planet this past week. And if you lived in Henrico, pretty sure I'm pronouncing that right, Virginia, you may have woke up to Christmas morning this past week. If you happen to be a fan of CRT televisions, earlier last week, a guy went around in the dead of night, dressed in black overalls and a TV on his head, and was leaving CRTs facing the doors of people's houses.
So it's like the Slender Man, but CRT Man?
Yeah, he said he wants to be known as the TV Santa Claus, according to one resident homeowner, Brooksbank. It's weird. Evidently, this happened Sunday morning in the Henrico's Hampshire neighborhood. Outdated TVs were found at more than 50 homes.
This is creepy as fuck. This is like the doo-doo in the bag, but only you get a TV. Hey, maybe you get like a really good CRT you can use for old computing.
It's so weird, though, because the cops are like, we don't know what to do. So they got like a giant truck came up and picked up all the TVs. And evidently, this is not the first time this has happened. This happened in a different neighborhood last August. Someone was randomly just putting TVs in people's houses. They don't know. They think it's just a college prank, perhaps. There was a YouTuber, otherwise known as Internet Today. They think it's a YouTuber in the area doing it because his channel just mysteriously just blew up and he happens to live in the area.
Maybe. It could, like I said off air to you, it could be like one of those live art demonstration things.
Yeah, and it's just because it's in a fairly richy kind of neighborhood, it wouldn't surprise me. But where does one person get 50 CRTs? Like a recycling plant?
Salvation Army or Goodwill?
But that, you'd think somebody would notice somebody buying up a bunch of TVs.
Or they got it from the dump?
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, I'd be very curious to know how many of these TVs are actually functional.
I'm willing to bet most of the CRTs, if they haven't been thrown around, are.
Yeah, like, it's weird. I mean, I saw some of the footage from some of the news reports on this, and I'm thinking, you know, some of those TVs, I wouldn't mind have taken, because if you're an old-school video gamer, a lot of retro consoles don't look good on HDTVs.
Well, especially if you get, like, a 9 or a 13-inch... One of the ones from the late 80s that had like RGB inputs for 8-bit computers. Those can be worth like $100.
Yep.
Or if you have what I had, which got destroyed when I moved, I had a 24-inch widescreen Toshiba tube TV that broadcast at 1080i, and it had component and HDMI inputs.
Oh, wow.
It was one of this weird hybrid. It was like a $500 TV, weighed like 80 pounds, but what it did was it had the best black levels I've ever seen, like still better than OLED TVs because it's a cathode ray, but it played widescreen, meaning you could use the zapper on an HD TV.
Oh, that's pretty
cool. Because it was a CRT that just happened to be a wide CRT that did 1080 lines of scan lines.
I remember old CRTs, particularly when I lived in Hamilton, being a big deal. This would have been about 10, 12 years ago.
Let me guess, a 32-inch Zenith.
Because I had my flat screen and my retro TV. But I remember I used to work at a place called Pwn's Game Center, and people would bring in their own TVs for Smash Brothers tournaments because of input lag.
Oh, yeah.
And frames. And I was like, holy shit, you people are dedicated. Because remember, when the Wii came out with Smash Brothers Brawl, that was only 480i.
Yeah. So there was no point in hooking it up to an HDTV.
Yeah, like, what was the big fucking deal? And a lot of people who had played Smash Brothers Melee, was all CRT anyway.
Well, and specifically because when it came out, and like in 2006, 2007, you were looking at 20 milliseconds or more of input lag. It's before TVs had a game mode where they would lower the visual quality but also lower the lag or increase the response time. So a CRT was literally nothing. Like, it's like less than one because it's 60 per second.
Yeah. And
so it was you never encountered those issues. So you had people that had their trusty 13-inch or 9-inch TV.
Yeah.
Because if it's a personal one, you could just sit right in front of a 9-inch TV, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. And when, like, at these tournaments, we'd have, like, 100 or more people in this very small game center, but we'd have multiple stations set up with multiple small TVs, and they would just sit crouched around it.
And the ever coveted 13-inch, usually they were the cheap TVs, but if you were lucky, you could find a 13-inch that had an S video input.
Yep.
And I had a 20-inch or 20 or 24, 22-inch tube that was an Insignia, like a Best Buy brand. First TV I bought when I was getting a job, that even though it was 480i, it had component inputs for DVD players. So even though it was interlaced, it had better color. And that was sought after. I ended up selling the TV. I paid $100 for it. I sold it to a gamer for $200 after it was discontinued.
Nice.
Because he's like, I don't care. He's going to use it for playing retro games. But he wanted it to have better color reproduction and better, like, contrast. Because if it had component on it, that meant it had RGB.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people that still collect these types of panels. Those, and especially the Commodore, like, 9 and 10 or 13-inch. You know, the Commodore TVs that had a TV input, but they also had the RGB or the VGA inputs. There's people out there now that still look for a decent quality 13 or 14-inch monitor to use for retro computing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool, but at the same time, I don't know what I would do if I had my, like, security camera on and I saw a guy with a...
Yeah, in the middle of the night, just appears and drops off the
TV.
That's
creepier than a clown showing
That's
up.
That's weird. Actually, it's weird. I was just watching this internet video, like, it was on YouTube about a week ago, and it was, like, creepy things caught on security cameras, and one of them was this person who just would show up at a person's door between 3 and 5 a.m. every day, like clockwork, and just stare into the camera. And because the person, like, their cameras would send a message to their phone, and the person knew they were being watched. That's fucking creepy.
Ew.
And just not good. So to move on to something a little bit lighter.
Let's talk about murder.
No. We're going to talk about Star Trek again in a roundabout way.
Okay.
So when you think about Lieutenant Commander Data, played by Brent Spiner. Awesome character, great actor.
Or is it Brent Spinner?
See, this is what we're going to talk about for just a few minutes. When you think about Data's name, it's Data.
Yeah.
But when I say data, you assume I'm talking about information of some type.
But in this case, Data processes data.
Yeah. And it's weird because there's an episode of TNG where Dr. Pulaski is correcting her on how to pronounce his name. And he says to her, one is my name, one is not. So at Big Apple Comic Con, Brent Spiner gave a panel about why he thinks Patrick Stewart has led us to say Data now. So it's weird for this. He says that the pronunciation of the word differed to Spiner's. To settle the data versus data debate, Gene Roddenberry created a new rule for the show on the spot. Whoever says a name first decides how it's pronounced from then on. So 7 seasons and 178 episodes of Star Trek TNG, Stewart's pronunciation of Data, a product of growing up in Yorkshire, England, has slowly but surely replaced the way Spiner, now you fucked me up.
Gotcha, motherfucker.
And millions of other of Americans were first taught how to pronounce the word. Undoubtedly, there will be those that disagree with this. However, Google takes Captain Picard's side, and so does the Oxford English Dictionary.
Because that's the way you say it.
Yeah, it just sounds right.
The Oxford English Dictionary, also known as the dictionary.
Yeah.
Like, people can say there's Webster's. No. Fuck off. Like, Oxford Dictionary is the dictionary.
Exactly. It's just the one you accept. And, yeah, Data is a character name. Data is a form of information.
Yeah. Data processes data into information.
Yeah. It just, it makes sense to me. And I found that kind of funny this week. So thank you, Gizmodo, for that story. Our last story, I don't know how the fuck this ended up in Forbes magazine.
Uh-oh.
So evidently, somewhere in the depths of Michigan, West Michigan, there's a man.
In West Michigan, born and raised.
His name is Kelvin Horton. And do you want to know what he's famous for?
It's Michigan.
He has the world's largest collection of VHS Shrek.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
He he's amassed more than 170 copies of the movie since 2014, the year he first got his first VCR.
Does the article also talk about when he was diagnosed with crazy mental illness for this? Like, are you serious?
He says, my brother Cody, who holds a film and video degree, started to get me into film and film history around the same time. So
he got me into one film history.
I picked up my my first VCR, and that started my collection of classic films on tape, as well as his own collection. He and I now live together with a couple of roommates, and between the two of us, we have a collection of over 400 films on VHS, not including Shrek, on display in our home. Some of them date all the way from 1939 to 2018. Yes, there was a VHS tape released in 2018.
Yeah, there's private ones, independent, but the last major release was A History of Violence in 2005. I remember that specifically.
But yeah, evidently he just found it. He wanted to capitalize on a meme, and he found it somewhat entertaining, as one of the most memes consisted of individuals pretending to have an unhealthy obsession with Shrek and being devout to him in all senses of the word. I found and absurd.
He's pretending, huh, now that he's been called out on it.
Well, he says, I found this funny and absurd due to my own personal lack of enthusiasm for the film as an adult. I started collecting Shrek because I love to make people laugh. I have always been someone who wants to bring joy to those around me. Absurdism and deadpan humor always brought me joy and brought joy to my friends. Now, there's another guy, and I can't remember what specifically it was. It was either copies of Jurassic Park on the Super Nintendo, or it was VHSs of Jurassic Park.
It's Jurassic Park on the Super Nintendo.
Which is,
there's a picture of him. He has a refrigerator
full of it.
And I made a reference. I ended up posting that on Facebook to The Beat Goes On, the local chain that has like 10 locations.
Yeah.
Because each location, when you would go to your pickup, when they had an order come in, let's say somebody ordered online, they wanted to reserve something, they would have something that popped up with like, it would be like a ding dong, you know, telling them that their order's there.
Yeah.
The Kitchener location that was near my house, which is now closed, their thing was, it would just pop up, Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park, and it would repeat it over and over again to no end because the manager thought it was funny and locked them out of changing it. So every time I was there, Jurassic Park. So I posted it to Facebook, and the response I got was, oh God, don't start that again. They thought they were rid of it now that it was closed. Because I just said, hey, it reminds me of the old store. Jurassic Park, .. Jurassic Park, .. And then below that's a picture of just millions of copies of Jurassic Park.
That's so fucking random. Just the fact that somebody at Forbes decided to pick this up as a story.
Yeah, it tells you it's a slow news week.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, obviously we got weirder stuff to talk about next week. But yeah, those are the stories that made the headlines for us this week in terms of just plain weird. It's kind of nice to talk about absurdism as opposed to science or weird monkey men.
And we didn't talk about murder. No murder this time.
Yeah, no murders, body parts, and Frankensteins.
Yeah. Well, I talked about sex dolls a bunch because I could.
Yeah, you fucking sex dolls and fucking Unicron.
Yeah.
Fuck be wrong with you. On that note, we'll be back right after these reviews of Alex taking a look at some Sega classics from, well, Sega.
That doll would have been worth it if it came with a sex sleeve.
If you could see my face, folks.
Yeah, he looks very disappointed, but also amused at the same time.
That's how I roll.
There are two new releases in the Sega Ages lineup, and I had a chance to check out both of them a little early. They are Space Harrier and Puyo Puyo, both the arcade versions of these respective titles. And I'm just going to give a quick overview of both. The Puyo Puyo is, you know, the classic Puyo Puyo game. It's really hard, to be honest. It is your classic puzzle solver where you're connecting different colored Puyo Puyos, and you know, you connect four or more in a row to, you know, blow up, you know, your things in your screen, send over blocks onto the other screen next to you, you know, your opponent. And it's the sort of, you know, quintessential arcade puzzler that we've all, you know, all known to come and love. And it's one of those titles that, to be honest, is almost too difficult for a home market. We have other Puyo Puyo games out there. There's the Tetris one on the Switch. That's, you know, a crossover. And then we've also had the other Puyo Puyo, the modernized version of the second and Fever that were put out a little earlier in the year that we talked about. So if you are a huge puzzle fan, this is going to be one for you. If you are somebody, you know, who likes to play the arcade experience at home, it's also great for that because you can just keep playing it over and over again when you lose, inevitably over and over again near the end of the game. Because as you get into the last couple levels, they get so incredibly hard and frustrating that you're like, holy crap, you forget that arcades were basically made to eat up your quarters. So I spent probably, I lost count at about 60 retries on the final level. So, you know, I was determined to win just to see what happens. And when you beat the game, you can get things like extra songs in the music player mode. It's made by M2 here, so you know you're getting high-quality port of this. But that being said, there isn't a whole lot to it other than the arcade mode and playing, you know, online. You can do leaderboards or head-to-head. So there isn't a whole lot added to this. It is, out of everything in the Sega Ages line from Sega, it's probably the weakest release I've seen so far. That being said, if you are a puzzle fan, you're probably going to like it. But again, there are better Puyo Puyo games released by Sega even this year on, you know, multiple platforms. So I would say this is probably one you can skip unless you're a huge fan and you're collecting all of them like myself, or you just were somebody who loved playing the arcade game. I would say this is one that you can avoid, but it's still super fun. Now, out of these two releases, the release of Space Harrier is definitely the better of the two. I would suggest picking it up if you're just a fan of old arcade shooters in general. You know, it's one of those games where you're in a sort of forced perspective, third person behind your character. You're flying through space and shooting at enemies that come at you in a pseudo 3D fashion. Most people have played it on like the Genesis or other ports, but this is the first time I've actually personally played the arcade version. And I found that it's actually a pretty good port. They've added some things to this game too. So they've added a mode called, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of it, but it's Komainu Barrier Attack. So what that is it gives you two little guys in your left and right as you're flying through space that will take a hit for you, and they recharge so they can take another hit. So if you bump into things to the right, or you take a shot from the right or a shot from the left, you won't die immediately if you have that mode on. It allows you to get to the end of the game without having to continue as many times as you would normally, which is, you know, a godsend when you consider how difficult these arcade games are. But you can set the difficulty level on here, you know, from easy to hard and so on. Beating the game itself unlocks more songs in the music player mode, which is pretty cool. And there seems to be a lot more customization here than there was on the Puyo Puyo game. I think the graphics hold up quite well. It actually has a widescreen mode, so it must have had a widescreen mode in the arcade, because that's what they usually do. Like, it's not like a stretched mode. It actually is widescreen. So I don't believe they would have programmed that in directly, but it does give you like different arcade cabinet modes so you can do the different aspect ratios. It also lets you select international versions or the original Japanese, which is kind of neat. So You know, I don't need to say much more on Space Harrier. I think a lot of people know that title. It's just whether or not it was a good port. And M2, again, has done a fantastic job. I would highly recommend Space Harrier if you only can pick one or the other. Both titles are retailing for $7.99 American, which means you're looking at about 10 or 11 Canadian, which is a pretty good deal considering you get a lot, you know, of game for your money and when it comes to anything that M2 puts out, especially for Sega.
And that's the kind of show it has been here on This Week in Geek. Hopefully you've enjoyed us taking a look through the weird, wacky, the strange, and of course giving you some reviews from Detective Pikachu, Audio Technica's headset, and the Sega Classic Space Harrier and Puyo Puyo. Coming up on the site this week, what do we got coming up?
This week we have more in the on Thursday and Sunday, more of your classic interviews you did with the adult film industry stars and directors and so on, because it's something you said you wanted. And I remember them being good interviews. So it's an interesting thing because at Twig we cover a lot of different things.
Yeah, like I've always been interested in talking to people just about them, you know, being people.
A little off the beaten path, a little like, you know, there are geeks and nerds among every facet of society. And in some cases, you find, wasn't one of the interviews somebody who does like computer builds and PC gaming and stuff?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been, again, it's been a while, so this is perfect time because there's many people that haven't heard these before, and they're gold, some of them.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're going back to the Twig archive. So for those of you that are new listeners, these are some interviews I've done over the years because Twig's been around for 12 years.
Yeah.
That's a long goddamn time.
In the realm of podcasting and radio, that's a long time.
Yeah, like we are, dare I say, an institution.
Yes, well, probably one of the longest consistently running Canadian podcasts by far that has never ever stopped.
Take that, motherfuckers.
Exactly. So we've got that. Obviously there's going to be, you said, more of Nerd of the Third. Are you on this?
Yes,
you were on last week's one that I posted. I didn't know you were going to be on it though.
Yeah, I was only in the first half of the show. We were talking about Good Omens and Lucifer,
and you hadn't seen it, so you were in the
So basically after the last segment I'm like, okay guys, gotta go doodaloo doodaloo doodaloo, and they're like, the fuck, Mike. This week we're talking about the 30th anniversary of the Game Boy, so that'll be exciting.
Yeah, and that generally drops they're fairly random.
You'll get it this week. Yeah, it's just a matter of what day.
Basically if the main show is posted Wednesday or so, which is usually what they aim for,
yeah,
then we'll have it on our site Thursday or Friday.
Yeah.
And then I believe I'm working on a Turtle Treasure episode. It just depends on what reviews I can actually get done, because I've got more running around to do with some doctor's appointments and all that fun stuff. And then this weekend, we both have Cambridge Chronicles that we are streaming on Twitch.
Yep, which you can find at twitch.tv/TerribleWarriors Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, though we typically go live around 8:45, as Justin typically does a little bit of a pre-show. You'll hear music and whatnot. It's our adventures in Shadowrun 2054 using the second edition rule set, which I have to read this week.
And that goes for about an hour, hour and a half or so, depending on wherever it feels right to make a stop.
Yeah, exactly. When we last left off, you guys had just met a biker gang, the Roadhogs, and were planning a elaborate ruse to fool the Yakuza.
Justin Ecock's Cadence character had decided to just abandon me with Yakuza a few weeks back. And my solution to it was they wanted to mug me and take all my money. So I went to go hand it over and then drove them insane with, with Chaotic World, to the point where they were screaming because they thought the demons of hell and their fallen friends and family were crawling under their skin and making their blood boil.
So,
and I said, and then I said, have a nice day, because I got a nice cape. So that's what you're in for.
Yep. And then if you're a Patreon of Terrible Warriors, they run a monthly tip game where typically me or Justin will run you through a game of our choice or your choice. And this month, I think we're playing a new game from Magpie Games called Zombie World, I think, which should be pretty cool. It's a deck-based RPG, so that should be fun. And then, you can find out more information by going to patreon.com/TerribleWarriors or TerribleWarriors.com. Coming up from me this week, I'm reviewing Godzilla King of Monsters, and I'm also reviewing Rocket Man, which nice. I've been looking forward to seeing all summer. I just got it on Blu-ray from Paramount. And I've been promising a D&D review. I just didn't realize how thick this book was, so I'm going to be reading Acquisitions, Inc., which is based upon the long-running D&D actual play podcast from Penny Arcade, and then how you can integrate the corporate structure into your D&D world. And it's interesting. It's actually kind of fun, so I'll have some thoughts on that later on this week. So hopefully you'll keep it locked to thisweekingeek.net, as you often do, and we do thank you for your patronage. So until next time, we have been...
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodds, and live free or die hard. And as always, in the famous words of my friend Jackie Bam Bam from WMMR, be cool, be kind, be careful. We'll catch you guys next time, right here on thisweekingeek.net.
Well, that's our show.
All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info on the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at @twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Your home is important. That's why Geico helps make it easy to save on condo insurance. Because home is more than just a place. Home is where you took minimalism too far because there's only one chair in your entire condo and your only entertainment is one card. Not even a deck of cards, but a single card. And all your guests have to share one plate and one fork, but you're convinced that less stuff means more freedom. The Geico Insurance Agency could help protect the overly minimalist broom closet you call home. Call Geico and see how easy it is to switch and save on condo insurance.